Testing, testing, 1, 2. Testing, 1, 2.
I want to, first of all, express greetings and congratulations that are so richly deserved by this graduate class. I also want to say to you that we are all very much indebted to you for your service to the Congress of the United States. And I might also add that you had to complete your work under some less than agreeable circumstances. Rising early in the morning to attend classes, working all day, and then when the Speaker and the Majority Leader of the Senate and the House would hold us in session, you have to work day into the night. But despite all that, you have come through. And not only have you come through, but you're very honored. So we express to you in a very real way our gratitude, and may I say our gratitude for your service not only to Congress, but to the country. But you have a very rare opportunity. And I suppose jealousy is a dark sin, but I'm almost jealous of the opportunity you have. It seems to me that by the time I graduated from high school, I've gotten as far as Sioux Falls, South Dakota, from the high school basketball program. This is now, excuse me, for the graduate. My knowledge program was pretty much out of the classroom. the inside. Not on the inside of the covers of the books for you, but on the inside of Congress. You know better than anyone else that politics is a very personal matter. Politics is human relations, sometimes it's the most emotional, and yet it's the most pragmatic war. Now this valuable inside information that you have, I wish you to prepare you better perhaps than almost anyone of the high school graduates this year for participation. I don't expect all of you will be going into politics or the government service, but in a very real sense, politics is the people's business. And as I've said so many times, people don't take care of the business, they tend to get the business. We have to be involved. Let me quickly say that with the passage of the amendment to the Constitution that permits the 18-year-old vote, you have a special responsibility, having this guidance. Thus, you have a chance to be leaders, you have a chance to be educators about the workings of Congress. You can never describe us as, infallible, contrary representative government made up of the people. People have shortcomings, people have rules. But you can be sure like Winston Churchill when he spoke of democracy. He said that democracy, and you heard it so many times, he said, democracy is the worst possible form of government. Except all others have been fired from behind the government. Which is just a way of reminding you that representing government, self-government, is a human institution. But in the long run, it will mean out more justice, give more opportunity, more fair play than any other system that man is able to devise. Now, I first visited this city about 40 years ago. Sometimes it's almost ugly. writings of the present and your hopes for the future. And as those who cannot be inside, I think you're somewhat better equipped to challenge the way things are done. The people will not have the benefit of your special experience. Now that's why I made it down here tonight to challenge you for future accomplishments. The great scientist Albert Einstein once observed about the American people. He said, "We as a people are," here's what he said, "we as a people are always becoming and never being, always dynamic and never static." His remarks may very well be taken as an appropriate model for your commencement of this life and end of the year. Always starting, he says, always becoming, but never quite finishing. We Americans always have our eyes fixed on the future. But the people who signed that Declaration of Independence, they were not all fools. Their average age is 36, Thomas Jefferson was 33, James Madison was 25, Alexander Hamilton by the time was 21. George Washington was commander of the Virginia militia at the age of 22. He was the manager of a 5,000-acre plantation at the age of 19. Young people have had a very distinguished role in American life. There is a census of youth, the spirit of youth in the American Republic today. You wouldn't believe it when you hear some people talk to you. But I tell you, there's vitality. There's a spirit of adventure. There's a spirit of daring. And the characteristics of this republic since its birth have been really encapsulated in three words: pioneering, optimism, and faith. We've always been going to try something. We tried first, Representative Bill. That's the most revolutionary thing that's ever happened. Sure. Communists are not revolutionaries. They're reactionaries. They put down the lights. We're the revolutionaries, in the best sense of the word. We challenge centuries, centuries of autocracy, centuries of empires, centuries of the rule of the high rights of kings. And we broke it apart and said, "Man, we're capable of self-government." Our progress as a nation has been a constant process, as Einstein put it, of becoming. A constant quotient of growth, of evolving aspirations and ideals. Now, what was declared in 1776 was not the completion of American freedom or its fullness, but a common privilege that all of us have for laboring towards fulfillment, and yet knowing that the task will never be finished in our life or lifetime. You took the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Now that is not a statement of achievement. That is a statement of hope. And you pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the republic for which it stands. That part is a fact. Then he said, "One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all." We haven't quite achieved that, but it's worth stating. It's a goal we're working for. And don't you ever listen to people that tell us we ought not to have goals, we ought not to have high hopes, we ought not to have promises. Everything that's worthwhile is a promise. The Bible itself is a promise. The Sermon on the Mount is a promise. All the great literature of history is a promise. The Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, these are books of promises, challenges. They're means of measure of our achievements and of what we accomplish in our life. I think that the record of the last 200 years reflects the gradual evolution of individual liberty, an ideal that was revolutionary at birth and remains so today. You're going to have a lot of people tell you that we're over the hill and the country's on the powwows and that there really isn't much hope and that it's all over. There's a certain number of constant delegates. Sometimes they get that mixed up to be what they think of as elections. Don't you live and don't you please for a moment. We have our problems and we'll continue to have them. But out of all these problems, as I shall point out, creation of a truly open society. If you're ever asked to define America, just simply say it's the cause of freedom in which human rights is the highest goal. America is not just a piece of junk. We're not the biggest country in the world. There are other countries that have more land area than Soviet Union, China, Brazil. We have something that nobody else can have. We have a commitment. Representing government, self-government, over a longer period of time than any other nation on the face of the earth. And I think that's a remarkable accomplishment. Now, this global society that I speak of is one in which men and women are free to develop their talents and pursue their dreams. That's what the Declaration of Independence meant when it said to pursue their happiness. See, the Declaration didn't guarantee any happiness. It just said, you need to be sure. Find your fulfillment. Make you your enrichment. What is it that makes you feel good? That's one of the creeds. An open society is one that is free of the old age specters that haunted generations of mankind. Disease, hunger, ignorance, prejudice, slavery, serving, political oppression, and religious persecution. Those were the characteristics of centuries of mankind's existence. The open society is based on the idea set forth in the Declaration of Independence of the inherent dignity of man, endowed by God Almighty with the soul, and with certain rights that cannot be taken away. You see, democracy is not just form and substance. There are many countries that have the form of democracy, but they don't have the substance of it, which, in a sense, is a combination of both institutions and spirit. It's the spirit of the equality of mankind because of the brotherhood of man and the motherhood of God, which is embraced in the Declaration of Independence, a political instrument that immediately combines political matters and spiritual matters in one end. This emphasis on dignity and on dignity and human rights is what gives sense and reason to the system of government that we call upon. Without people would be things to be manipulated and controlled rather than to be respected. Respect for the dignity and rights of all. That all are freely and are thus entitled to equal treatment under the law gives, as I said, a very recent development in the history of the human. Even in this, the greatest of all democracies are open, is still short of the mark. In the last 200 years, we have only gradually extended the vote and other civil rights and liberties to include the poor, the racial minorities, the women, and other ethnic groups. We have painfully slow as our progress might appear. We have come a long way. And we can do even better if we overcome some of the some of the awful human railings that have plagued the great American experience. Gradually, over two centuries, we have learned that it is just as important to develop our human resources as it is to develop our natural resources. And when you hear people in the public body talking about whether the first or second of the Soviet Union, sometimes ask that, what is most important? Are we first or second in human rights? Are we first or second in religious freedom? First or second in freedom of speech? What is it that we really want? You know, they tell that story, I remember some years ago, about the dog from East Berlin that met the dog from West Berlin. And my goodness, the dog from East Berlin, the communism spoke very, very good. He was sweet, his eyes were bright, he was healthy, he was strong, he had good muscle tone, his fur was good. Poor dog from West Berlin, kind of little scrounge. beings, unless they apply it all, rich or poor, black or white, whether it's one of the men, whether it's one of the enemy. Gradually, we have extended the concept of equal justice so that it applies to every citizen, not just to an elite minority. Ultimately, it was our belief in the ideals of our Declaration of Independence and Constitution that enabled us to endure the dark days of the Great Depression and World War II, while other nations lost their freedom and embraced them.
Thank you.
But we have people that are scared of social, this kingdom and to bear the consequences of our mistakes, both past and present. We must be prepared to do things that we ought to do simply because they are right, not because they are evil in some kind of heaven. We must be willing to make some sacrifices now in order to protect and preserve what we most cherish, American life, for future generations. We must accept the burdens of leadership as the strongest nation of the free world, and don't forget it, my fellow Americans. And if we fail to lead their arena, Lincoln was right. We are the last best hope of us. And when people say, well, we ought not to be concerned about what's going on elsewhere, just remember how big the community we are. We need to accept the responsibility for our actions, both as individuals and nations. Franklin Roosevelt captured the essence of this chapter, and I remember it, because I was of his generation in the sense of my first vote. And he inspired me. And his last message, as a man who is crippled, we're going to be a victim of the war, a captain of the war. This incredibly powerful man said, the only difference to our realization of tomorrow will be our doubts of today. Let us move forward with strong and active faith. Here was a man who couldn't walk, but said, let us move forward. Here was a man who took over the helm of government when the nation was literally bankrupt and on its knees. Here was a man that had to face up to the incredible challenges of World War II. He had every reason to be discouraged. His life was getting away, and he was a casualty. And yet, my great man, he knew that the future was what was important. And he said, the only limit, the realization of tomorrow, will be our doubts of today. And don't think we're going to have that in our prayers. When these people have moved and moved on the wall, listen to them, honor, and then remember, there have been our predictions which we thought that he would ever see. And out of each of those predictions, whether it was the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, when everyone in that one was over, or whether it was the terrible war between the states when millions, hundreds of thousands of our people were killed, whether it was the Great Depression, the World War II, whatever it was, there were darker days than we had yet. There have been days of corruption and scandal. There have been days of doubt of cynicism. And yet the United States of America today stands as the wonder of the world. If you ever have any doubt about these paddles on the distance, be proud. Don't be careful. But have faith in yourself.